Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The latest body blow to the fantasy sports industry has come from the Nevada Gaming Control Board, which banned daily fantasy sports contests unless companies like DraftKings, based in Boston, and FanDuel obtain gambling licenses.
The decision is hugely significant because these companies have long maintained they are games of skill rather than chance, which has allowed them to skirt federal gambling regulations. And now, Radio Boston has obtained a secret audio recording of Nevada gambling officials bringing the hammer down on the fantasy sports industry. Let's listen.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can you close me up? On what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Yes! Apparently Nevada gambling officials were shocked, Anthony! Shocked to find out gambling was going on.
And thank you, Claude Rains and Humphrey Bogart from that classic film Casablanca. It's a great scene, though, that seems to resonate perfectly more than 70 years after it came out. And speaking of a little bit of history, we're going to talk now to the inventor of fantasy sports, the accidental father of what's become a multi-billion dollar industry and the center of a huge controversy around sports betting. Dan Okrent is a writer who served as the public editor for the New York Times. And back in 1980, he was a baseball fan who came up with the idea for a fantasy baseball league, which launched this whole thing. And he joins us now from Cape Cod. Dan Okrent, welcome to the program. It's great to have
you. I should say that I came for the waters.
So your idea was called Rotisserie League Baseball. Tell us how it came to be and what you had in mind.
Well, the idea came sort of out of nowhere. It was somewhat modeled on something that a teacher of mine had done at the University of Michigan in the 1960s with another junior faculty members. But my idea, which was much more elaborate, would have individuals choose a team of actual baseball players, and then based on how that team of the individual's players, how that team performed, would determine who would win in contests among friends. And there were 11 of us who sat around a table in an apartment in early April of 1980, and we had a winner, and at the end of the year, we celebrated, poured a bottle of Yoo-Hoo over the winner's head, and then, boom, here it is today, billions of dollars.
Yeah, I want to play a clip from a 2010 ESPN documentary about fantasy sports called Silly Little Game, in which Lee Eisenberg, who was with you the moment that you gave birth to this idea, here's what he said.
He came to the table at La Rotisserie with this sort of immaculate conception of a game called the Rotisserie League. Just sprang from his rib and boom, thus creation occurred.
So La Rotisserie, this was a restaurant in New York, am I right? And this is what gave it its name. But Dan, do you remember that moment?
The moment that it jumped out of my rib? No. There were several of us who ate lunch about once a month, several baseball fans who ate lunch once a month. A month at this not very good restaurant in East 52nd Street in New York, and they seemed to be the people who would be most willing to play, and a few of them said yes, and off we went.
So this was before the internet. It wasn't a huge business for you. What kind of winnings did you guys take home?
Well, it wasn't meant to be a business. It was meant to be something that would amuse us during the baseball season, and the winner in our league in those years was getting $1,250. He got half the pot. Everybody put up $250. There were 10 teams. Half the pot went to the guy who came in first. Second, third, and fourth divided the rest. And then it became very popular very quickly. All of us were involved in the media, or most of us were involved in the media. So we got a great deal of publicity that first year. And soon there were people playing all over the country, not remotely like the numbers today. And we tried to make a business out of it. But as one of my buddies said, you know, we started this for fun, not for money, and we got our wishes.
So here we are today, billions of dollars changing hands, some people making huge fortune. I got to ask you, what's it like for you to sort of watch this huge business now, all the result of your idea?
I feel saintly because I'm not a greedy man. I was once at spring training in Florida, and these identical twin dentists from Indianapolis came up to me and said, you know, we want to thank you so much for this thing you've done. It's changed our lives. And the other one said, yes, and to think you gave it to the people for free. I said, yes, because I'm a schmuck, but he didn't understand Yiddish, so it didn't get us anywhere.
I read, I think you said in a couple of different places that you feel like Robert Oppenheimer, that is, you wanted to create this wonderful thing for peaceful purposes, but maybe
right.
It's gotten a little out of hand.
And then they dropped it on Hiroshima, and here we are today, and This is, I guess, the consequence, right?
Right, right. Well, let me ask you about where we are today. These huge companies, DraftKings, FanDuel, they're all operating outside the federal gaming law, although Nevada has sort of changed that, at least in Nevada. But what is your view, bottom line? Is this gambling? Is there even a question about this?
No, no question at all. Of course it's gambling. You put up some money, and if you're lucky, you win, and you go home with more money. And if you're like most people, you go home broke. So it's exactly like going to casinos. It's it operates outside the federal, actually inside the federal internet gambling law, which is to say that it is specifically fantasy sports, specifically exempted from the Internet Gambling Act of 2006. I'm sure, and we've heard from congressmen who were involved in it, that I'm right, that at the time that they did that, they were exempting the sort of man-to-man couple hundred dollars that, you know, people played with their friends. No one was anticipating this at all.
Yeah.
So it was sort of like saying, yes, you can continue to play poker in your apartment with some friends, but you know, you can't go public with it.
Yeah. And what do you make of this decision yesterday from the Nevada gaming regulators? This happens in the mecca of gambling, and they've basically said that daily fantasy games have to be licensed as gambling, which puts these companies in a tough spot, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, it breaks my heart.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of saintly, but I'm not so saintly that I wouldn't love to see these companies all go bust. Because there's something profoundly dishonest about what they're doing, and particularly hypocritical if you consider that the major leagues, some of the sports, the NBA particularly, and major league team owners like Robert Kraft of the Patriots, they've invested in this. And these are the same people who give sanctimonious speeches about how they loathe gambling and gambling can't corrupt our wonderful game. But they're happy to make money off it if they can. And I think that the Nevada Gambling Commission, Gaming Commission as they call it, sees it the same way. This is going on, and we always tax gambling in this state, and we make most of our state budget out of it, so we want our piece of the action, too.
Yeah. I'm also curious to know sort of how you – actually, I want you to sort of help us understand this, because there have been allegations that what happened at DraftKings and with this employee who bet on FanDuel, that it amounted to a kind of insider trading. Do employees necessarily have a kind of insider trader's advantage if they take this on?
Well, it depends on what level the employees are. The point is that if you are operating at DraftKings and you have access to the data that is being accumulated on DraftKings servers, and you can see how people are betting, you can guess it's probably the same across the street at FanDuel. So knowing what I know, because I see that not many people have picked this particular player for today's game, knowing what I know, I'm going to bet over across the street and walk home with the money. We're not taking the information and doing it inside our own game, so they're able to remain sanctimonious about that, but obviously it's identical to as if they were doing it with their own game.
Yeah. Dan Okren, stand by. I want to introduce another voice into this conversation. Mark St. Amant is a sports writer and fantasy sports enthusiast. He's also the author of Committed, Confessions of a Fantasy Football Junkie, and he joins us from Boulder, Colorado. Mark, good to have you.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So you wrote an op-ed in the New York Times recently where you said, for us, and I guess you're referring to fantasy sports enthusiasts, this scandal is a joke. The only thing shocking about this whole story is that anybody could possibly be shocked. What did you mean by that?
I really meant that, you know, to echo one of Dan's points, you know, I really play it, oddly enough, still, despite all the billions of dollars being thrown around on these sites, I still play it for that, I guess, hokey by now, thrill and fun of having it enhance the sport I love. So I think it was mostly about not being shocked that, you know, I wasn't shocked that something nefarious and underhanded could go on in an industry that is unregulated and has billions of dollars being thrown around. It was more the surprise that people are surprised when they don't win was more of my point, in that in that, you know, even if you take away these employees that, that you and Dan just discussed, these DraftKings or allegedly FanDuel as well, employees who have access to privileged data, ownership percentages that, like Dan said, can give you a strategic advantage. You know, those players still have to perform that you pick, but still, it can give you an advantage to know who to avoid maybe and who to pick. Even if you if you regulate that and fix that, you still have thousands upon thousands of sharks, as they're known in the industry, sharks who are professional DFS, daily fantasy sports players, who you still have to compete against. And these guys are wielding algorithms, optimum lineup software, software that helps them pick the most vulnerable opponents. You know, typically, you know, I like to think that I know a little more than most, but I'm still vulnerable in this situation. So I think my shock is that anyone could think that despite the incessant, you know, bombardment of branding, which has been ridiculous this early football season, you know, promising $2 million for a $2 bet or whatever, the fact that, that someone could actually think they could win and beat the house is a little insane to me. So that was my shock.
Interesting. So, Dan, I wanted to ask you to comment on that. Does that sound right? I mean, is there just an incredible naivete out there among...
Yeah, I think it's exactly right, because there are people who are doing this for a living. They're professionals, and they are using advanced software and computer calculating power. And it is like the stock market, which is to say that the individual investor is never going to beat the street. The street has got all the power, has got all the energy, has got all the information. We don't have it, and the same thing is going on in online fantasy sports. The individual is going to lose against somebody who is the industrial equivalent.
Yeah. I want to ask you both this question because I'm really intrigued by this. I've never played fantasy sports, and I'm not being at all superior or smug about that. I'm genuinely curious what draws sports enthusiasts to it in the first place. And let me start with you, Dan, since you started this whole thing.
Well, our version of it, and I think the kind that Mark is talking about as well, goes back to that thing, that kernel that resides deep inside the gut of every sports fan, which is, I know better than the people who are doing it. I'm a better general manager. I'm a better team owner than John Henry is. Why did I make that trade? I wouldn't have made that trade. I would have made this trade, and therefore I would have won the pennant. So we were competing against against something of a professional ideal. We think that we could be better than the people who actually run the game.
Yeah. Mark, what about you?
I agree. I think, you know, I grew up in and around Boston. I was a lifelong Patriots fan going back to the Jim Plunkett days. And as any Patriots fan listening knows, there were some dark days, you know, mixed in with some Super Bowl runs.
Oh, yeah.
So for me, it helped me. It enhanced by the time, you know, I started playing, which was after Dan, but it was still in the 90s before the internet, and it was pen and paper, and, you know, we would send our scores and league updates out by what used to be known as the mail. It only enhanced my love of the NFL, and there was that thrill, there was that Vegas-like thrill, which is ironic now talking about Nevada, but there was that Vegas-like thrill of having, quote, action on every game, not just your local Patriots game or some other game that you happen to be watching on Monday Night Football or something. It just enhanced my love of football, and also, you know, since a lot of leagues started it in corporate America, for me, it really enhanced the camaraderie at the advertising agency in Boston I was at the time called Arnold. Just the camaraderie and the smack talk and the fun, and it really enhanced corporate culture and brought people closer together.
Interesting. So. But Dan, did it get to a point where, I don't know, you're almost not paying attention to the sport on the field anymore because you're so obsessed by your own team?
Well, I put it a little bit differently. You maybe are not paying attention to your favorite real team any longer because you're paying attention to your own team, and there's that great conflict that every fantasy sports player is familiar with when you have, you know, you're a Red Sox fan and the Red Sox are playing the Yankees and you own on your team one of the Yankee pitchers. Who are you going to be cheering for?
Right. Well, Dan Okren, sorry to step on you. We're running out of time, but he's the inventor of Rotisserie League Baseball, the accidental father of fantasy sports, former public editor of the New York Times. Dan, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Mark St. Amant, author of the book Committed Confessions of a Fantasy Football Junkie. Mark, thank you as well.
Thank you, guys.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.